Well, it's good to be back together, and I do feel like this is where I belong. And part of what makes me feel I belong here are all the people that I've gotten to know in the Houston community and worked with as an activist. And one of those is with us here tonight, Ryan Bradley. Brian has been involved in many things in the Houston area and was instrumental in work done in Queer Nation and on AIDS issues. He, of course, had the case where he was fired as a nurse, an operating room nurse, and sent off to do some other job other than his training because he's HIV positive. But the reason he's with us tonight is to talk about the verdict that has come down this week in the murder case of Paul Broussard, which it's kind of eerie that it was almost 2 years ago exactly. I remember that hot summer here in Houston. Brian, what exactly has happened this week in that verdict?
This week we disposed of five more of the cases, bringing a total of 9 cases having been adjudicated, all with guilty verdicts. We offered the 10th and final defendant a deal, if you would. He's currently in the Montgomery County Jail on a parole violation, and he turned that down. So thus far, we've got 9 out of 10 admitting guilt and receiving some sentences. The 5 that appeared in court this week, 2 were given the opportunity to plead to a higher charge.
Before we say what they were allowed to plead to, how were these involved in the case?
Okay.
These 5 people.
These 5 as a whole are less culpable and cause less bodily harm to Paul and the 2 other victims than the other 3 that have already been sentenced, but that's not to say that they weren't actively involved in it. There only one person could be convicted, John Bice, for wielding the knife and actually stabbing Paul and causing the liver damage that he ultimately died from. Of those 5, 3 were less culpable and were allowed to plead to a higher offense, though, murder with a deadly weapon. At that point, that allowed them to be eligible for deferred adjudication. The other 2 more culpable ones were only allowed to plead to a murder charge of a lesser degree because that would not allow them to be accessed to deferred adjudication. It sounds real Kafkaesque and crazy, and it sounds like we're being shoved a load of manure, but that wasn't really the case. Nancy Rodriguez, Paul's mother, and family members and friends played an intricate role in deciding this punishment. Primary reason behind that was that at least the 2 more culpable ones will forever and always be known as a murderer, a convicted felon. A felonious record will follow them to the ends of their life with their voting and travel restrictions and such. But all 5 of them were given a 10-year sentence probation, with 3 allowing for deferred adjudication and 2 not. They're not eligible for any type of consideration of lessening that probation in less than 5 years. All of them were giving a sentence of 500 hours of community service, strictly supervised, to the gay and lesbian community. And Nancy was able to choose which organizations that would be: Q Patrol, MCCR, and one of their projects, the Mac Center, perhaps, and one other that I forget right now. And that's going to have to be okayed by the probation department. They'll have to undergo psychological counseling, testing, drug abuse, and such monitoring. 3 months minimum of boot camp. They are all in jail right now, went directly from the court to the jail to await a slot in the boot camp. Their time in the boot camp will not be lessened by the amount of time they spend in jail awaiting. $1,900 of restitution to the family, and the family has elected not to take that money, but to give it to the gay and lesbian community. Quite a few other things. A curfew for 6 months. They must attend 12 meetings over the course of 1 year of the group murdered parents of murdered children. Maintain full-time employment, so on and so forth. But the biggest thing that we got out of it was that for 10 years they will be closely watched, and should they do any crime and come in front of the judge for that offense, they then in turn will go back in front of Judge Brian Raines and be able to be sentenced for Paul's murder anywhere from 1 day to 99 years. So they must be squeaky clean, and it's thought that of these 5, a good 3 of them probably will be seeing Judge Raines or another judge very soon.
Brian, I have 2 questions. One has to do with Do you think that these young men can be rehabilitated and that they do have remorse and are sorry about what happened and will become decent citizens? There's some hope for redemption there. And the other thing that you mentioned was that Nancy Rodriguez, Paul's mother, was satisfied with the terms that have developed and the input from the community that allowed these sentences to take place. How exactly does that work? If you're a victim or your family of a victim, how do you get involved and have say-so in the court system? Because isn't that part of what happened with this case?
It is what a part of what happened. Actually, according to Andy Kahn with the Mayor's Victims Assistance Program, he's been with the family throughout this whole ordeal. He wrote and read to the press a very eloquent gay and lesbian positive document about what abuse that we put up with daily, from harassment to murder, and how that should be socially unacceptable. And he pointed out, to use his words, that this was a landmark decision, and as far as he knows and other people with victims assistance groups know, this is a first ever in Texas where a victim's family and friends were able to play such a large part in the decision making body or decision making process of the punishment. And it's my opinion, you may not get the judge to admit this or the prosecutor to admit this, that's a direct result of continued 23 months of pressure by several people and the threat of the gay and lesbian community turning out in the huge numbers that we did, not only for the original march, but the one-year commemoration march, the march in the Woodlands, the protests that organized down at the courthouse in January. The judge has changed his opinion. He kicked back, put his feet up, took his coat off, and said, I've got all the time in the world for this to be worked out. Because he did not want to be seen, nor did the prosecutor, Mike Anderson, want to be seen as not considering our feelings. They were asked at one time, why are you making Ms. Rodriguez be the prosecutor and the judge in this? It said loudly and clearly, if you become involved and you're persistent and you're right, in which we have been, it'll pay off. Maybe not as much as it would for our straight counterparts, but we all know about being second-class citizens anyway. As far as their being rehabilitated or being remorseful, of the 10 defendants and the 9 now guilty legal murderers, only one and their parent, and that person's parents, Brian Spate, has shown any remorse or made any apology. That day in court Tuesday was perhaps one of the roughest days of my life. I had to get up and leave the court on more than one occasion, the courtroom. The defendant sat there and smiled and laughed and giggled, and their girlfriends smiled and laughed and giggled. Their parents did. They all had an attitude of, how dare you put us through the inconvenience of having to come down here and sit and put up with this. Nancy, myself, Scott Lewis, who's actually been more involved with this than anyone else, went to lunch and came back. The representative from the mayor's office, we were all together. Nancy walks down the hall, clearly identified as a woman who's greatly upset about the murder of her child. And she is hissed and booed and called bitch and all kinds of things by the defendants and their girlfriends and family members. I sincerely doubt that they are remorseful. I know they're not remorseful, and I sincerely doubt that they are worthy of our consideration as far as attempting to rehabilitate them. Far too many people out there that can be rehabilitated, and I'm not so sure that these kids can. I think they're gone already, and they're 19.
How might that affect their work within the gay and lesbian community that's part of their sentencing?
Well, the judge heard the request that they come and see what gay and lesbian men and women look like and act like and how they feel, and that it was essential that they experience part of our lives, and perhaps they'll see that most graphically walking on the Q Patrol. Having been a founding member of the Q Patrol, the first night out, I was hitting the back with something. Let these guys be on the other side of the road, if you will. They are going to be strictly supervised. They're not going to be able to come into our community organizations and just serve their time. They're going to have to be sincere about it, or the probation officer is going to know it, and they're going to be right back there in front of the judge. And if they're not careful, they'll be behind bars where I think they really should be.
Well, the question is, if they're behind bars, would that allow them to be out quicker, number one? And number two, if they're behind bars, they don't they would never get the sense of what the community is like, or they would never get the sense of that they can't make a mistake. I mean, like make a mistake and then being thrown back in jail again. This is like, because there was so much pressure on this case, that they're trying to live up to a standard to show the community that this is a fair court system.
And I think the result of that coming about was our pressure. Hopefully, my hope is, I hope I'm not so cynical and jaded, that they won't be able to come out of this having learned something and not repeat this again. I'm just fearful that their attitude is so firmly ingrained that they'll do whatever it is they have to do for the period of time, and then they'll revert back, right back to it. My mother and I were talking last night, and she was saying how fearful she had become of young people. These kids were not born this way. They were taught this way. And in the most charitable of senses, maybe they can be untaught. But it's going to take some real close supervision. As far as if they had went to, there's a lot of concern, you know, that they got off easy and such as that. It is my feeling, and some legal experts that I've talked to, it's their feeling that these guys did get less overall than someone from the general public would have gotten for killing someone, you know, from the general public. They did get less time. Once again, that takes us back to the fact that we all know we're second-class citizens, and even when we're being treated better than we are in the past, we're still second-class citizens. In order to have gotten more, we had to have taken this to trial, got a guilty verdict. That happening was not too definite. Then, on top of that, we'd have had to have a jury that would have assessed a high enough punishment to override everything that they got in this. And I just quite simply don't think that's realistic, considering the general homophobia in society and the Texas judicial system. And then you throw in the fact that people that are sentenced to Texas prisons spend such a small fraction of their actual sentence in there.
You're listening to Gay and Lesbian Voices, and this is Jack Belinsky along with
Deborah Bell. And just to wrap up, Brian, I want to ask you, then how should we as gays and lesbians in the community who may encounter these young men deal with them? What would be your suggestion?
Well, not to be the cliche, but out and proud, as our logo this year, is the most important thing. And when we are victimized, we need to stand up and immediately do something about it then. And if we're not asked to be a part of the process, make ourselves a part of the process. Be contentious and upfront about our rights and demand them, and be there every step of the way. And folks begin to listen. It was seen in this case.
You think we've made inroads, such as working with the police department?
I know we have. I've seen that personally happen. Just look at the media and the general public, what they have heard from us following Paul's death. They know what hate crimes is now. We got a very weak House bill that year passed about hate crimes. This year, a stronger one was presented. You know, our issues are being addressed because we are making them other people's issues.
The incredible thing is that there was a picture on the front page of the Chronicle. The story was buried further down. The Post, the story, and the picture was on the front page. It was the top item in a couple of the TV newscasts, and that used to never happen before.
It never happened until you really saw Queer Nation getting out there and just doing their stuff. And even the folks have been out there for years and being largely ignored by the media. People are covering their stories now. And the world is realizing we're everywhere and we are everybody. And slowly but surely, they're coming around to acting the way they should. But they're not doing that because they're just good folks. They're doing that because we're demanding it. We're not being given our rights. We're taking our rights. You know, folks went to Washington, D.C. this year, excuse me, and I think they came back to various parts of the country going, I'm not going to take this anymore. And when they stand up and don't do it, things are a heck of a lot easier. It's easier to be out than in.
Yeah. Well, of course, this was a hate crime, and we've become more knowledgeable about what all is involved in hate crimes. And, of course, the Q Patrol was formed as a result.
They do perform,
yes, we
yes,
do.
I know. And, of course, I've been out of touch over the last 9 months of being away to know exactly what the activities are with the Q Patrol. So let's give them a bit of a plug. How would someone get involved, and what exactly does the Q Patrol do?
Well, the Q Patrol was formed after Paul's murder to largely monitor the bar area and then surrounding area of Montrose for hate crimes. They patrol the streets with uniforms, take down license plates, numbers of people who throw things or say things, turn that into the police, work closely with them, been responsible for apprehending several people with guns that have been firing, and they get license plates, number of people that have said things, and like once they've done that three times, they send them a postcard in the mail. It's just given one more layer of protection to the people who come there. But they are in desperate need of volunteers. It's still such a... Everybody loves it. They're glad they're there. But once again, it's like, well, and you should be because that's your job. They need volunteers desperately. I don't have their number in the top of my head right now. But
you can call the switchboard at 529-3211. Well, actually, that's sort of the unfortunate thing about most of our organizations. There's a lot of good service, like the switchboard. The switchboard's another example that we have.
That's the other organization that Nancy wants these men to do some service in also.
And we have these organizations, but we don't always have the people to staff the organizations to do the work that they're supposed to be doing.
What is the status of hate crimes in the gay and lesbian community now in Houston? Has there been a tracking? I believe the switchboard has a hotline now for hate crimes.
That's correct, but still it's my understanding that the Houston Police Department, as other municipalities throughout the state, they're not really adhering to the federal dictates of keeping up with the statistics that come through. I think it's still something that Sam Nucci considers not that important at all. But hopefully that doesn't send a message to anybody out there that's victimized to any degree to not report it. They need to report it to the switchboard. They need to report it to the police department. And unfortunately, it's not fair, but they have to be doggedly persistent in seeing that they're addressed. I've been down to homicide on more than one occasion with a person, a victim, where papers weren't filled out at all. Their reports weren't taken. Their reports weren't filed. Okay, they call me, I go down there with them, then everything's done proper. Well, I'm sorry, everyone shouldn't have to have someone else to go down there with them. But they have to stay with it, and they have to stick with it. One of the best things they could do is, if you're a hate crime victim in Houston, file your report with the police department, but also call the mayor's assistance office. Tell Mr. Andy Kahn what's happened to you, and let them know about it also. That office, that part of the mayor's office, has really been active and very supportive of all victims of crime. And gay and lesbian people are, to that office, are just as important as anyone else.
Brian, I'd like to thank you for coming by this evening and talking to us, and congratulations on being named Grand Marshal for the Lesbian Gay Pride Week celebration.
Thank you very much for both.
And are you also doing after hours?
Still doing that, yes.
Doing after hours is on midnight to 3 a.m. Saturday night, Sunday morning. You're listening to Lesbian Gay Voices. This is Jack Polinsky.
And Deborah Bell.
And we'll be back in the next half hour with some women's music. Not we will be back. Mary Helen will be back.
If you think Queer Nation is a bunch of radical queers, think again. We're doctors, lawyers, teachers, parents, politicians, students, and radical queers. Queer Nation is a group of people joining together to end discrimination in all its forms. Many people are interested in Queer Nation because Queer Nation addresses ideals and issues particular to them. Affinity groups of Queer Nation include SHOP, Suburban Homosexual Outreach Program, a program to be visibly queer places where lesbians and gays would not normally be visible, PIST, People with Immune System Disorders, FYQ, Fine Young Queers, United Colors of Queer Nation, Q Patrol, the Eyes and Ears of Montrose, and many, many more. We meet Tuesday nights at 7:30 p.m., 1505 Commonwealth of Nevada at the Montrose Palace. For more information, call 529-2969.